Good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today in the roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three important topics that have raised their heads in our international education news feeds over the last 7 days. But before we get into the meat of the topics today, I do want to give a shout out to those of you who are joining us on the podcast, who are watching us live here on Facebook or are catching the reruns on our YouTube channel or on our Facebook page. So thanks again for being a part of the conversation here today. Even if you're just listening, we appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come and join us and hear what we have to say about international education issues that are impacting U.S. universities from a global perspective, but also from a very local perspective. So happy to be with you today. Today, Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. And we're going to be talking today about three issues that we've seen pieces of over the last few years, last few months even, as we've talked about these issues on the roundup. But today, I want to first give a shout out to where these stories come from each week. What we do at SMIE Consulting is to provide on Mondays a newsletter that comes out 9 o'clock Monday mornings that has all the SMIE news and that is fit to share, and that's social media and international education news. And from that newsletter that comes out on Mondays, we pull three of those stories each week to provide some more in-depth perspective from an international education background on how these impact what we do in U.S. international higher education. So what's up today? We're going to be talking about first one of the most thought-provoking articles I've read over the last couple of years related to China and how Chinese students are treated on campus, how we as institutions respond to them, how they respond to us. It's a fascinating article from a professor's point of view, a sociologist. And this is something that I'll be sharing some, my thoughts on some of this. And it studies basically UK and US trends when it comes to Chinese students and how they got there, what they get engaged in, where the shortcomings are on the institutional side. And this article is one I certainly recommend to anyone who works with international students, particularly Chinese students on college campuses, either through recruitment, through student services, advising, orientation, programming, whatever it might be. It really will provide you, I think, with a very different but very useful perspective on how Chinese students interact with their Western peers on campus, how they interact with each other, and some of the pressures that they're facing that USU universities either do or do not respond to well. So this is something that I think is a really important piece of the overall puzzle, and I want to spend some time on it today. And thank you, Rima and Krista, for joining in today. Hope you're both well. Looking forward to connecting with you again soon. But when it comes to this particular article, and as I mentioned, she takes a look first at the UK and how universities there have had challenges dealing with Chinese students, where the issues of lack of engagement with their Western peers happens, where they kind of tend to huddle around themselves and not really engage with others, the issues of cheating and those kinds of accusations and what that's done both in the U.S. and the U.K. to Chinese student impressions about their host countries. But then also takes a look at the political impacts, obviously, in the U.S. of the current administration's view on China, though the president has taken a couple of steps to say, oh, we want to make the process the same for Chinese students as we do everyone else. It's the reality on the grounds are very different in terms of what's happening. So I want to, though the first half of the article does focus a lot on what's happening in the UK, I do want to take a tight look at some of the recommendations that this professor has for U.S. institutions that I think are very well-founded and certainly are ones that are common sense, but also ones that what really should be happening anyway, but it rarely is. So in terms of what, when we talk in the U.S. about our Chinese students, so many universities, some of which I've worked with closely, have put kind of all their eggs in the China basket over the last decade. And now, you know, over the last 3-4 years, have started to see a drop-off, and that's been concerning to their bottom line and to their overall institutional profiles. So that's causing significant concern. And it's institutions that don't have perhaps the nuanced relationship between their recruitment and their student services sides to where they aren't necessarily communicating well and getting along and really working together for the benefit of all the students that are coming into their institutions. I think that's an area where is a particular piece of the puzzle that I think a lot of institutions where there are disconnects happening, where there's, oh, we've been doing the same thing we've been doing in China for all these years, and we were seeing so much success. We've even got a rep that we have over there now, based in China, but it may be too little, too late. So what has to happen are things that really need to be more structural, it seems, because we're seeing Chinese students have really are not of uniform. They are as diverse as in terms of their perspectives, their backgrounds. It's not just the rich Chinese kids that are coming to the United States anymore. They're much more socioeconomically diverse, much more geographically diverse from within China as well. So there's a lot going on that I think a lot of institutions, when they think about China, they think of them monolithically in terms of how they approach them, rather than getting to know them well and what works best. So this professor has put together several recommendations. First of which, for specifically for U.S. institutions, that they need to invest more in direct recruiting in China. This, from anyone who's heard me talk about this issue, this is a no-brainer. If you're going to be actively seeking to recruit Chinese students, because of the way the market is set up, because currently, for the last decade, the market has been driven largely by educational agents, and there are certain challenges depending on who you're working with, where you don't know necessarily who they are, what the direct practices are, unless you're going there yourself to do your site visits, to do more hands-on training, to do more holding their feet to the fire in terms of expectations. But more direct recruitment really it's an investment, yes, absolutely. And when it's combined with not just recruitment of students, developing the relationships in person with counselors, by having someone on the ground in China, by working with your alumni overseas. The first wave of Chinese that have graduated, gone back to China, are now success stories. Those need to be absolutely essential pieces of your puzzle there. And the professor in this story makes a lot of those cases very well. And that the networking that can happen and the partnering with local Chinese schools that you can do with that kind of direct investment in recruitment is invaluable. So very important piece. And she makes the claim that rather than leaving them to the mercies of the third party agencies and the testing rat race, by your investment in them, in their schools, with the parents, with your alumni, you're really starting to establish a real firm basis and foundation for success in the years to come. It's not going to be immediate, but it certainly is one. If you stick to it with anything in international ed, the more successful you will be. What the professor also focuses particular attention on is what Western institutions, in particular here, U.S. institutions, do for students to help Chinese students to integrate them more with their peers from other countries, from the United States. That it is that there is a yearning, in this professor's own opinions on this, yearning in them to make American friends, but they struggle to overcome the barriers, as the professor notes, due to the individualistic culture of the United States and the excessive partying and drinking that goes on that really dominates many social scenes on college campuses, they don't have the Western-based cultural knowledge and capital yet to really succeed. So it leaves, in this professor's opinion, these Chinese students feeling marginalized and excluded. So that kind of forces this withdrawal into their peer group. So when they first come over, they do want to make friends, but if the services aren't there to integrate them, to make them feel welcome, to educate them on the U.S. process, rather than just everything's different here and it's going to be a challenge, but you can do it, rather than just a gung-ho pep talk, by actually sitting down and purposefully strategizing with your international students on campus that have gone through the program, that have maybe can give you regular feedback. Hopefully that's already happening with focus groups with your new students after they've gone through the program fully. If you have a full year orientation, or if you just have a semester, or even a 2 or 3 day program, evaluating how you're doing with that group, not just immediately after, but a year after, and what could we have done differently type of approach, getting to know these students. And that's something that she really takes a focus on, that will help. Also, the U.S. institutions need to provide more diverse networking opportunities for students, for these Chinese students. That, and her thought, and I can't disagree with this piece at all, is that international student offices need to reimagine themselves as social homes for international students and as forums to bring them together with U.S. students. And oh my goodness, yes. Yes. This is the piece of the puzzle that I think is so lacking. I think part of the challenge is if it's a one-person office or two-person office where it's a administrative assistant and a student advisor, director of international students, whatever it might be. If it's a small office, that's far too much for one or two people to take on themselves. But if you have a larger office and you can take think about yourself not just as a and I know it's hard as DSOs, I've been there. But if you're an advising office, to be more than advisors. I know many of you already are, so that's just part of who you are, and that's part of your passion for why you do what you do. But for these Chinese students, whose parents have never been to college, by these first generation Chinese students coming to the United States, that it's going to be harder for them to make American friends. They need to be handheld a little bit more. That there need to be that getting them engaged in the campus culture, in other student organizations beyond the Chinese Student Association, is so important. Conversation partners, language partners, host families, whatever it might be, making the extra efforts and having those programs in place to support these students is so vital. And when that happens, and you take care of your students very well, and they have the positive experiences, this is not rocket science. This is 101 international admissions and international student enrollment management kind of topics. But when you do that, you really have an opportunity to take your international student enrollment management strategy, and particular with regards to China, to the next level. And this can be replicated and should be replicated, frankly, for all your major demographics and every international student that comes to your campus, by helping and make them feel like you want them there, that you are will help them. If you don't know the answer yourself, you're going to take them to someone who does. Not just give them a phone number, give them a website, give them an email address. It's making that extra effort to make them feel welcomed. So that's the piece. I really, really love this fresh perspective from an associate professor of sociology, Yingyi Ma, at the Asian American Studies director at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse. So that's a really strong article, recommended to all of you. And as always, I put the links to these stories in the comment stream, for on the Facebook page for these topics, for the live chat, on the midweek roundup. So please take a look at those, and you'll also catch the links to these and my takes on them in the newsletter that comes out on Mondays as well. So please do subscribe to that if you're not already. Now, shifting gears to OPT. OPT is one of those things that, for those who are in international student advising, talking to you again, we know how cumbersome it can be, particularly with STEM OPT now, with the paperwork that you have to do to document these students and their work that they're going to be taking, and reporting that you have to do back to CVIS. All of that, it's really an administrative burden. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. But OPT in and of itself, when we look at it as a part of our, even though we don't have a national strategy for international education, in terms of the one of the most attractive features of the United States for international students, yes, we know we've got the best quality institutions in the world. Yes, we know on our college campuses we do provide a very welcoming environment for international students. The challenge really is for us is when we look at OPT, it's not just it should never be viewed as just a paperwork decision. It needs to be an integral part of our recruitment strategies. There needs to be focus on it for students in your recruitment materials, but also for your services. Not only what you do as international student advisors, but also what your career services does. And this is probably the part of the international education puzzle that for most campuses, if there isn't already strong relationships between your admissions, international admissions people, your international student advising people, and your career services people, this is a disconnect that can really hurt your institution and your ability to recruit students in the long run if you're not taking the time to develop the kinds of programs, the kinds of strategies that really will are geared towards helping your international students maximize this particular benefit that they have. Now, the article that I'm talking about is a West report, and they've been coming up with some cracking research reports lately, and this one on OPT is certainly no exception. It's a huge article, and certainly it's going to take a good 20 minutes to read thoroughly. But what it does do, it talks about the importance of OPT and as a driving force of our international and student enrollment growth. And it has actually carried us across the line when our new international student numbers have been dropping the last 3 years. The main reason our overall numbers have still gone up, even though this year it was only 0.05%, or in 2019, 18-19, it was only 0.05%. OPT is what has carried us. And there's some there are some warning signs that that's been slowing, and that's been slowing for 3 years now, but that's the growth that's been slowing, I should say. But we're at a point now where we're also dealing with, it's one of the reasons it may be slowing is because of processing delays with OPT applications and getting students their EAD cards so they can begin work. Those kind of delays in particular, and also with STEM extensions as well for that extra 2 years. There's some additional administrative hurdles. Requests for evidence have become more common. So these are some real challenges. And the article does go in depth quite a bit into the overall trends, but also as a part of trends in our overall international enrollment minus OPT, we've actually been declining. Fell 2.1% last year if you take out the number of international students actually enrolled in studies rather than OPT when they're not necessarily, certainly ne necessarily for post-completion OPT, they wouldn't be. But why is this happening? There's challenges across the board, really. It's not just on one sector. Certainly, the West article focuses on the drop in business and management enrollments. We know, and we've talked about this here on the Roundup many times, how MBA programs have really been taking a hit the last 3 years. Not just the run-of-the-mill MBA programs, but even some of the most selective programs have seen their international enrollments drop over the last 3 or 4 years. So that's been a real significant piece of why that's been a challenge, and why OPT. Because MBA students, unless they're in one of these new hybrid kind of business analytics programs that can qualify as STEM programs, they're outside of the mainstream for the STEM. They only get a year of work permission per degree level. So what the West report does focus on is now with STEM students being more than half of our international student enrollments are in STEM fields. And able to take that up to 3 years of work per degree level, you're seeing that become one of the things that has sustained us, the interest in that. And they focus, as I often do, in taking a look at the United States as more than just the United States. We are part of a globally competitive market for international students. We aren't the only guy on the block. We're one of many now, and certainly there are other national markets that are becoming more attractive than the United States. Whether they'll still have the capacity to absorb many more international students is another question entirely. But for now, there are other countries that are doing a much better job of their international student recruitment initiatives by having national level policies, by offering increased work opportunity, and even pathways to citizenship, work, study, work, citizenship. And those are very attractive to certain demographics in the world. And that's something that in the U.S. we've had for the last, since OPT became, STEM OPT particularly, became authorized in 2008 and then finalized in 2016 under the Obama administration, it is something that is absolutely bedrock to our continued success, is having this post-study work opportunity, particularly with STEM when it's 3 years per degree level. And that makes all the difference to some students. Yes, they can get a high-quality education that can hopefully lead them to a job, but it's the length of time that allows them to work and get that experience. For those that want to stay, a potential pathway to a more semi-permanent visa with an H-1 and 6 years of that, and then potentially permanent residency after that. Long process, and it's certainly not an easy one for international students who want to come to the United States and eventually become citizens through work. But it's there. It's a lot easier in other countries now. UK has reintroduced post-study work. They've introduced 2 years for all students. Australia has had similar programs as well. Canada has again made their process much smoother. But they are coming up against capacity limits, perhaps, in Canada. That's a whole other story we'll cover, I think, in weeks to come. But definitely pay attention to this particular issue. Excuse me, because it won't go away, because OPT will continue to be an important driver in international student interest in coming to the United States. That's one we can't let slip. Obviously, the Boyce article also points out the current case that's going to be going through to the Supreme Court soon on this issue, on how OPT is more of a guest worker program in disguise, that the standards are high because of the tax exemptions for Medicare and Social Security that some students have when they're on OPT, puts American workers at a disadvantage for hiring. So there's a lot of, that's obviously a huge thing that if that gets, I don't think it will, just because of the very nature of the Supreme Court now, and even the more conservative jurists on the Supreme Court would probably not be ones to harm America in the long term by kicking out our best talent, because many of them all of them went to universities where they worked hand in hand with international students and see the value of having them as colleagues, that having them as contributing members to our country. So it's certainly going to be one that we're going to pay attention to here on the roundup, and any news on that, you're certainly going to hear it here as well as your favorite other news outlets. But we'll certainly keep our eyes peeled on how OPT continues to impact what we do in international education. Now, this final story is out of the UK, and obviously UK had some groundbreaking election results this past weekend. Where Boris Johnson's Tory government has been given a new lease on life with an expanded majority, and will be able to pass their Brexit resolution through the House of Commons and Lords through Parliament in the next month or so, to make it in time for the next January deadline, the latest postponement to January, end of January. So it looks like Brexit will finally happen. And it'll be interesting to see stories coming out of the UK over the next few weeks on how their universities will be dealing with that, particularly as it impacts their current EU populations. And there's stories even today showing a surge in non-EU students at UK universities, showing an increase of 16% in 2019 So with the, and at their EU non-EU numbers are at an all-time high. EU numbers have been also a lot have been trying to come in under the wire and get grandfathered in before Brexit happens. So it'd be interesting to see where that goes. But this manifesto, it's not an official policy at all. It's certainly a proposal by a regular contributor to University World News, and makes it a clear admonition that it's most manifestos are just short-sighted, intended to grab attention, and promise reductions in taxes and all of these wonderful things, or increase scholarships to international students, in this case as a manifesto. But for the UK, there are four or five different pieces of the puzzle that I want to share with you that I think are worth considering, at least how it applies to what we do here in the US. First is something that we were just talking about with OPT, about graduate outcomes and having that become, as the author writes, develop a mindset that sees graduate outcomes as a strategically more important, as strategically more important than student recruitment. So this is absolutely spot on, because there's no point in having all of these new wonderful international students come to your institution, and you've done a fantastic job, you've increased enrollments, but they come to your campus, they don't have great experiences, they graduate, but they can't get jobs, and they go home dissatisfied. The damage that can do longer term to your institution's reputation is more significant than, frankly, bringing in a big class. So what does that mean? So think about after 5 years, what will those graduates that have come in and had positive experiences and have graduate outcomes that are clearly they would consider a success, is that enough? Will that make a difference? And the resounding answer is yes. And it's something that there's an example with Coventry University, the author cites, where students are offered a quote, primary focus on preparing you for the future, your future career, and giving you a competitive edge in the graduate job market. So what it is in this case, it's globalizing its career services and focusing on graduate outcomes as a key, according to the author, a key facet of international student recruitment and marketing. As we were talking about earlier, the more U.S. institutions have a clear plan for promoting the success of their students and showing that they are positive outcomes, that they are getting jobs, that they have services in place to help them get there, not just interview writing class or interview class that you can take with career services that is offered to any student, domestic or international, a resume class that's offered to everybody. But it's the programming that's specifically designed to help your international students navigate the job search, internship experiences, and all of that to help prepare them for life after college. Yes, what you do with your general education, with liberal arts, with the core curriculum, as you say, preparing them for life outside of college is life after college is bedrock to what you do. It's that next step of internationalizing that will really make you stand out as an institution. So that's the first piece, and I couldn't agree more with this. And that has universal appeal, not just in the UK, but can be any Western institution that's trying to compete for the best and brightest students. And the second point she's making is make the data the basis for your decision making. To fulfill graduate outcomes. So make it data-based. And if you want to have 35% international students and have 25% working or studying abroad as part of their degree, that needs to be matched with something, with investment on the institution side to really make that happen, because it needs to be that way in order to succeed, not just be paid lip service by administrations, upper administration officials. So next point, understand and respond to employer needs, market conditions, and changing trends. Absolutely. And this is where, again, as I mentioned earlier, this is a disconnect that happens almost across the board when it comes to U.S. institutions, where there isn't a real way to connect the dots between student recruitment, student services, and career services and alumni, where those four areas are critical to the student journey in terms of outcomes. In terms of saying what those outcomes are, helping to ensure that they happen, and working with the individual offices on campus to really provide the students the tools they need to succeed. So foundational for me. There's a lot more in this article. I think it's definitely worth reading. As I said, the links to it are in the comments section for the video here, and that one from the University World News. So thanks again for joining me today. And as always, the podcast will be available later today, Wednesday afternoon. And we'll look forward to just a quick highlight. The next two Wednesdays are Christmas and New Year's. So we'll be taking a quick break for the next 2 weeks from the roundup. But we'll be back with you in the new year stronger than ever. So have a great Christmas and New Year's, and we look forward to chatting with you soon. Cheers.